Today is Earth Day, and because Pam has been working her little socks off, and because I am such an earth-based minister, I am going to do, it's my great joy to share the sermon, the talk. But before we get started, I need to tell you that I use the words nature, Mother Earth, and God interchangeably all the time. I do this because there's really no separation between these things for me. So today, to celebrate Earth Day and to honour the fact that it's Orthodox Easter, Celtic Easter, I'm going to tell you some stories. In Scotland, there's two ways to study theology. There's the wee book, which is the sacred texts like the Bible and the Torah. And then there's the big book of creation. And today I'm going to share a few chapters from that big book. Chapter 1. Things are much more complicated than they appear. There's a book by C.S. Lewis called The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. It's about these children that go into another world called Narnia. And in this book, the children meet an old, old ancient man called Ramandu. And they find out that Ramandu isn't just a man, he is also a retired star. S-T-A-R. And the child Eustace says, "Hey, in our world, a star is a huge ball of flaming gas." And Aslan says, "Even in your world, my son, that is not what a star is, but only what it is made of." We, like Eustace, think because we know the name gravity, and because Newton explained some things about it, we think we understand what it is and how it works. So gravity that drops apples down from trees to the earth so that deer and earthworms can have their fill, perhaps is far more complicated. Perhaps gravity is actually an expression of a loving magnificence that tenderly and forcefully holds creation in perfect balance. I just give this as an example. What I want to stress here is that it's important that we don't assume we understand. Or as St. Paul writes in Corinthians, because we only see in part now. And it's important that we remember that. So let's not make the same mistake that Eustace makes. Don't assume that we see in whole, like the two babies in the womb. You know that amazing story I like to tell about the two babies arguing about whether there's life after delivery? Let's not make that assumption that what we can perceive is the entirety of the world around us. Mary Earle, on her book about Celtic Christian spirituality, says this: "The sea, the sky, the trees, the animals, the stars, all these are continually speaking the praise of God, but without human speech. It is the vocation of all of creation to praise God, not only in song and poetry, but also in living creatively within the divine design and pattern." Chapter 2. Loving the Earth like you would love a person, creature, an animate thing. If you remember nothing else about what I say today, this is the thing to remember. The earth, all the beautiful trees, the animals, oceans, all this created beauty are beings and not things. The earth, which we are part of, is a being. She is not a thing. But our culture and belief system defaults to seeing this living earth as a thing, or even worse, a utilitarian thing. All of creation, from the tiniest part to something the size of the moon, is a sacred being and holds energy, life, and form. This world is profoundly sacred. And God called it good. I'm going to ask you to please spend as much time as possible with people who experience an intimate reciprocal relationship with the earth. They will help you reorientate your assumptions to see the world not as a thing and not as something separate from yourself. I remember the very first person I met that blew my mind open with this. Her name was Daphne, and she was an Aboriginal woman I shared my office with in Australia. And she would come in and she'd say, "Simon, I was just telling Mother about your situation with your commute." And I remember thinking, "Daphne, your mum's dead, isn't she?" Yeah. "Well, anyway, Mother said that you should do this and this and this." And I just had to stop her. And I was like, "Daphne, you're talking about Mother Earth, huh?" She's like, "Yeah. Anyway, Mother said this." And it was pretty amazing. Now, I didn't know what questions to ask. I couldn't begin to understand her reality. So I just shut up and tried to pay attention, tried to see what Daphne was seeing. But of course I couldn't, because I'm not Aboriginal. Let's jump forward 3 years in time, and now I'm back in my homeland. I'm in Scotland. I'm living on the sacred island of Iona, listening to the land and trying to hear something of what Daphne might have heard. But in my body and upbringing and culture, the sacred in the natural world is called the still small voice, and doesn't chit-chat in the way that a mother or a pair of birds would chit-chat away. Over the years, it's not just Daphne that I've seen do this. A couple of years back, not that long ago, I was helping in a sweat lodge, and the elder's rattle cracked open, and all this tortoise shell and leather went into the hot stones, and it created this foul pollution, and we all had to abandon the sweat lodge. It was a very unusual situation. And afterwards, I was helping remove the blankets and doing what I could to support the ceremony. I was so grateful as a guest to be there. I was basically being a minion. And I remember watching the elder come over at the very end, and he kneeled down in the empty sweat lodge, and he talked to the rocks and in his language. And he had a conversation, and he was clearly dialoguing with them. And afterwards he said, "Oh, Simon, this is what they want us to do." And I did exactly that. But it was really amazing. Here's somebody again that is having a familiar, reciprocal dialogue with the natural world. It's clearly a being. But not just a being that is wise and that can guide him like a saint or a loving parent. Cynthia Bourgeot talks about how important silence is. She says that when we are in silence, and I think that she means quieting so that we can tune into the natural world around us, that this spiritual practice is actually a way of us tapping into a more expansive way of thinking. It's a really important prerequisite in developing a mind that can see beyond the dualistic, beyond what already exists. I want to tell you about a perfectly sunny day on Iona in 2008. It was April. And the warmth of the sun on my skin and the colors, and it was a hard time in my life. And it was such an incredibly peaceful day. There was something extremely special about it. The colors seemed more vividly alive. And I remember meeting this woman called Fionn, who happens to be the holy leader of a Celtic Christian order called Culte. And she walked past me and she said, "Simon, happy Easter." And I looked at her and I was like, "What?" And she's like, "Yes, it's Orthodox Celtic Easter. Today is Celtic Easter." And I remember thinking, oh, that's what it is. The land remembers this. The land knows that this is the holy day that the Celtic monks would celebrate, even though there's nobody here other than Fionn who remembers that. And it started a big shift in me to begin to see the sacred on Iona differently. I learned that on Iona, the land itself is much more holy than any of the buildings or the history of what humans have done there. The buildings that you see there now are just two relics of two of the institutions that lived, worked, and prayed there. There have been at least three others. In the Abbey every morning, we would say, if Christ's disciples keep silent, these stones would shout aloud. But I think most of us in our minds were defaulting over and over again to the stones that made up the wall of the Abbey. And we used to say, if every church should crumble and decay, we are your habitation, God, closer than breathing and nearer than our hands and feet. Why did we think that God lives in a church? What a strange question, especially for people living on Iona. We know that the Celtic nuns and monks worshipped outside because their buildings were just primitive round wooden buildings. The sacred setting for their world was nature. They sang their psalms to the sea, they spoke their prayers to the land, and God in the firmament witnessed everything that they did. When you meet people who have an intimate, reciprocal relationship with the land, they will teach you many things. They will teach you that the land, trees, rivers, that these beings of earth remember us. And they will remember us when we come back 50 years later. They will tell us that stones can be friendly or grumpy, and that trees, the standing ones, have individual personalities, and that they can hold you in your pain like a soothing parent. There's something so healing in the presence of trees. When you see the world this way, you learn that what you do on the land matters because it is witnessed and held sacred. It's like our voice echoes and becomes beautiful in the world around us. Somehow the echo of our being finds its way into the trees, rocks, grasses, land, and is held there forever, or at least for a very, very, very long time. And most of us are completely oblivious to this. Many people think that their thoughts, feelings, actions don't have an effect on anything other than the human world. And this is one of the reasons that we hurt the earth and exploit her riches. Because we don't see the earth properly. Earth is not a thing. Trees are not things. Neither are animals, seasons, mountains, oceans, and individual places and creatures. They are not things. Chapter 3. We, like Adam and Eve, are made up of this earth. Her body is our body. In my last year at seminary, I moved out west and I had to watch the classes on Zoom. And I remember sitting outside with my headphones on and my little six-year-old neighbor was outside with his dad. And when I was finished, he came up to me and he said, Simon, what are you learning about today? The class was on Rumi. How do you explain Rumi to a six-year-old? I paused and I said, I'm learning about the thing that makes the trees grow. I'm not sure how helpful this answer was to him, but I have thought about it ever since. What is the sacred life that manifests in us and all around us? Somehow that life force that directs the geese north on their epic migration is in me. What do I do with this incredible gift of life? And what can I offer back for all the beauty and abundance that creation offers me? This is The Summer Day by Mary Oliver, Saint Mary Oliver. Who made this world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she steps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention. How to fall down into the grass. How to kneel down in the grass. How to be idle and blessed. How to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is your plan to do with this one wild, precious life? We are Adam and Eve. Eve means living. Adam means earth. We are living earth. We are living, breathing parcels of the sacred creation. The force that birthed the universe is still unfolding in and around us. That energy is available to us, and we can connect with it. When we slow down our thoughts, interrupt our ego's story, and pause, then we can realign with the massive web of life that is all around us. Now, this whole sermon has come out of the fact that yesterday I broke my social distancing. And I did it because one of my people in my home church is 9 months pregnant, and a baby has no time for social distancing. It's going to come when it came. So I had to do a blessing for this baby in the trees where we were all seated 6 feet apart. And there was just something so incredibly profound about that baby shower that would not have been the case if we had been sitting in a house. Yesterday, we placed our sacred work, our prayers, our meditations into the cathedral of the trees. There, we think, see, and hear differently. I am sure that the Celtic monks on Iona and the Celtic nuns on Iona worshipped outdoors because this was the most sacred place for their prayers. So as we approach Earth Day, which is on Wednesday, I want us to remember that nature is our being. It's not a place that we go to. It's not separate from us. And it's also a place in which we can connect with our divinity that is part of that unitive force. You know, we all feel different when we take ourselves out into nature. Whatever your sacred work is, whether it's social justice campaigning, healing work, prayer, being a decent husband, thinking before you speak, whatever that sacred work that is for you to do this day, please take it out into the natural world. There's a wonderful Jewish practice called Hittibut. I don't know how to pronounce that. And we're in that practice, you speak out loud to God. Really highly recommend you try this. If there's a lot of people around, hold your phone up and pretend you're on the phone. It's really, really, really important that we expand our thinking and change our relationship with the earth, because David rightly reminded us earlier, this 50 years of Earth Day, 50 years of us realizing, hey, there's something wrong in how we're seeing the earth. Hey, there's something that we need to be doing. 50 years since the first celebration of Earth Day. Einstein says, we can't solve our problems at the same level of thinking that created them. And I urge us to, as we respond to the enormity of this environmental crisis, we are letting our descendants down. As we respond to that, let's change the way that we see nature. Let's get rid of this Newtonian, utilitarian, consumeristic way of seeing the earth and ourselves as separate. In summary, I urge us to shift our way of seeing Mother Earth so that we can foster a reciprocal connection with God through creation. What we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. And this has a beautiful flip side. Because the love we offer each other, the healing we bring inside our hearts, is carried back to the earth. After we are long, long gone from this place, I believe that the love, healing, prayer, and creativity that was held in our bodies, that will remain. What we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. Amen. I'd like to close with a prayer by John Philip Newell. We pause to listen for the beat of your presence in all things, pulsing in the light of distant galaxies, sounding in the depth of our soul, vibrating in each vein of Earth's body. One sound as vast as the universe, one universe filled with presence, one life within every life.